Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an absolutely incredible guru of technology, blockchains, and the cyber world, Mr. Rohas Nagpal from Pune, India. Rohas, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Rohas is the chief blockchain architect of the Wrapped Asset Project, WRAP. So Rohas, let's start talking about Wrap. Tell me about this venture and what is a wrapped asset?
Sure. So this is where I'd like to just briefly share my screen with you. Mm-hmm. So to briefly explain to you what wrapped assets are, because I believe that is going to be the next evolution of the blockchain. Mm-hmm. A wrapped asset is when you take a normal real world asset mm-hmm. and tokenize it and make it available to people on the blockchain.
Okay.
Now you would wonder, why would we even want to do that? Mm-hmm. One of the biggest advantages is fractionalized ownership. Okay. So just imagine in future, you could buy 1 square inch mm-hmm. of a very posh building in Dubai. Mm-hmm. Today, you need a huge amount of money to maybe buy out an entire floor or a building. Now imagine mm-hmm. if the world's investors can buy a small square inch or a square centimeter. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that a wrapped asset enables. And you could do this from, you know, as you can see here, art mm-hmm. and collectibles mm-hmm. to commodities like gold, silver, even to human talent, fiat currencies. Mm-hmm. So that's the vision and the motive behind the wrapped asset project. Okay. Taking the world's assets, putting them on a blockchain and making them available to a global pool of investors. Mm-hmm.
So let me then ask you a silly question. When the corporate world started to go public and they started to say you can buy shares worth 10 rupees, assuming mm-hmm. the face value was 10 rupees, in the company, was that not also a wrapped asset where instead of buying a square inch, you are buying one share?
That's an interesting question. Uh-huh. But when you're buying a share, you are buying ownership of the company.
Okay.
So the equity share is an asset in itself.
Okay.
But now if you take this equity share and make it available to people on the blockchain by tokenizing it. So for example, Warren Buffett's company, their shares are, each share is worth more than $100,000. Mm. I may not be able to afford even one, but I could buy a fraction of it.
Okay.
So the blockchain token is not the asset in itself. It represents an asset, which in this case could be an equity share.
Fair enough. I understand. So let's move on. Do you want to stop sharing this?
The screen? Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. So thank you for sharing the screen, Rohas. But let me ask you then that, you know, you're also building something called the Future Money Wallet.
Sure.
Help me understand what this means.
Sure. So when we look at the wrapped asset project, there are two sides to it. Mm-hmm. So on the one side, you need to tokenize those assets. And then on the other side, you need to make it easy for people to buy and sell them. Mm-hmm. So that's where the Future Money Wallet steps in. That becomes like your gateway to the world of wrapped assets. Mm-hmm. So you can buy and sell through the Future Money Wallet. That's the broad vision behind.
Very interesting. And, you know, there is also a view of, let me ask you about blockchains. You know, what got you interested in blockchains?
Sure. So very interestingly, I mean, now here I'll have to merge with what I used to do in my earlier avatar as a cybercrime investigator.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm broadly cybercrimes in the next paragraph. But
Sure. So then I'll have to kind of bring it in because that's how I got introduced to it.
Okay.
So this was about, I think, 2010 or 11. Mm-hmm. And I was helping one of the law enforcements to investigate a case of the drug mafia using Bitcoin for payments.
Wow.
And I had never heard of Bitcoin. It was very, very new at that time. And then I came to know how they were actually selling drugs. So what would happen is you go to this coffee shop. There's a youngster sitting there. You give that youngster some cash. Mm-hmm. He would then convert it into something called Bitcoin, which I had never heard of, mm-hmm. and give you a number, say 84. Mm-hmm. You go home and a few days later, you get a book through courier to your house. Open the book to page 84, mm-hmm. tear the page out, cut it into small pieces, put a piece on your tongue and the drug takes effect. So these were those, you know, chemical synthetic kind of drugs, mm-hmm. colorless, tasteless, odorless. And if it's in a glass of, it looks like a glass of water. Mm-hmm. Dip a brush, put it on a book, it dries up and just send someone the book. And that's how I got introduced to the concept of Bitcoin.
Wow.
Obviously, I was completely blown because mm-hmm. I found it fascinating. And then as I started going deeper, I realized that blockchains, for the first time in the world, are giving you something called immutability,
mm-hmm.
provable immutability, that the data has not been tampered.
Mm-hmm.
And it automated something called smart asset lifecycle management.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone from the cybersecurity background, it was absolutely mind-blowing. And that is why then in about 2015, 16, I moved completely into that space.
Very interesting. So, let's first talk about your earlier avatar, which was in forensics, if I can use that term. But you co-founded the Asian School of Cyber Laws in 1999, when most people were still about beginning to understand the internet. Tell me about some of your early experiences and maybe give me a couple of examples.
Absolutely. So I started my career in the early 90s in the field of hacking.
Mm-hmm.
Then I moved into investigation security. And that's when I realized that it is important to firstly educate people. Mm-hmm. And when I say people, I mean the law enforcement, tax enforcement, judiciary, which is why Asian School of Cyber Laws was set up with two objectives.
Mm-hmm.
One is to educate the world about cyber law, cybercrime investigation. And the second is to actually do real world investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to do investigations in 18 plus countries, mm-hmm. and across all sorts of sectors. But I would say the most interesting cases always came or the tax enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So law enforcement, I already gave you one of the best examples, which is how drugs were being sold using Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, we did a lot of investigations around the dark web, where people are using the Tor browser and then accessing a completely hidden web.
Mm-hmm.
And there they are able to buy and sell all illegal things from weapons to narcotics to you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Tax enforcement, a lot of very interesting cases. So many times, what people do is that they maintain double accounts. One, what they show to the government, and one, what they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But the mistake they make is they use the same laptop to do that or the same mm-hmm. computer to do that.
Right.
So many cases involved when those computers were confiscated.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would run forensics and recover deleted information and then be able to create that what were the real transactions on which tax was payable and what is the transactions that they showed. So a lot of those cases were very, very fascinating, very interesting. Way in which people would hide stuff.
Can you give me some examples without names?
Sure. So when it comes to hiding stuff, so one of the most innovative ways was this one businessman, we got his main laptop, right? Now on the desktop was a huge picture of Lakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
Now that being the goddess of wealth, a lot of businessmen would put it.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we scanned his entire computer, we found nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, one day we were just looking and while we were discussing the case, this photograph was open. And then suddenly one of us realized maybe the data is inside that photo.
Oh.
So there is a concept called steganography,
mm-hmm.
where you could take a file and hide it inside an image. Now that will not show on the image,
mm-hmm.
because when you look at the fundamental structure of an image file,
mm-hmm.
there are lots of gaps in it,
mm-hmm.
into which you can hide data. So the photo looks very authentic, but
mm-hmm.
then when you use the right steganographic software,
mm-hmm.
you can recover files. And that's where we found his entire black account, so to say. So I would say that was also a very fascinating case.
Wow. And you just mentioned that you worked across 18 countries and multiple industries. Are the challenges very similar between India and the rest of the world? Or are some countries far more advanced in using the dark web and figuring out how to bypass laws?
Sure. So first of all, I would say 80% of the cases across the globe and across sectors involved either phishing,
mm-hmm.
or fake emails or both.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, if I go back to 1999 or I talk about it today, it is still the same two attack vectors.
Wow.
Most of the attacks, even today with sophisticated ransomware coming in, ultimately it is going to get through either because some user
mm-hmm.
clicked on a link in a fake email or he got fooled into going to a fake website. And 20 years, 30 years later, it is still exactly the same problem.
Incredible. And, one of the things that the average human being constantly faces is what happens if my computer gets hacked, or there are cybercrime laws and, we can go to the police, etc. But what does a common person do if such a situation arises?
Yeah. So, the only option is to go to the police,
mm-hmm.
because legally then only they can start the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could always go to some private entity, but the point is if they need to get log files or they need to get, who was using a particular IP address, that's not something you'll be able to do without the police and the court coming into the picture. In India, now the government has set up an online portal where you can go and a lot of cases can directly be registered there. You don't even need to go to the police.
Okay.
I think it is cybercrime.gov.in. So that makes it much easier. However, if your case doesn't come into the categories there, then you would go to your local police station, or if in your city there is a cybercrime police station or cell, then you could directly also approach them.
Interesting. And, you know, when you have investigated a lot of these cyber crimes, and I'm sure you worked with the authorities there as well, and when I was reading about you, you said that you worked from aerospace to banking to law enforcement to pharma to shipping, etc. For our viewers and listeners, give us one or two interesting examples of what happened.
Okay. So I wouldn't name the company, but there's
no names.
Yeah. A manufacturer of a very sophisticated cars. So, you know, cars are today like computers in themselves.
Correct.
So once they found a case where a lot of their cars, when they went above a certain speed, they would immediately, the brakes would jam and get locked. Now, initially, they thought, okay, this is some kind of a glitch. But then somebody there suspected there's something more to it. And then when we got into the investigation, we found a very, very interesting thing that was happening. So, you know, these cars are really sophisticated. So sometimes the problems that the car faces can only be solved when you create a new software module for it. And somebody had managed to hack into the network where when that module was being sent from the headquarters, to the local center where the car was going to be now updated, the software was going to be updated, they had hacked that protocol and they were managing to manipulate that.
Amazing.
And because of that, they were able to cause these problems because they were actually trying to assassinate somebody who used to be in one of those cars.
Wow.
So that was like absolutely mind-blowing. And this was several years ago. Today, I'm sure cars are even more and more like computers. So I remember many years ago, in one of the cars that I owned, we tried some experiments. And you could, you know what, from a distance, switch off the headlights of the car.
Okay.
Now just imagine you are hurtling down the highway in rain and you're going really fast. And remotely, someone is able to shut off your lights. I mean, you could have an accident and everything could be. So we realized that cars are such a big attack vector today. And that really scares me. And in fact, some years ago, I could name this because this came in the news. But Fiat faced a lot of problems with, I think, one of their models, where a group of hackers proved that through the audio system of the car. So the vulnerability was in the audio system. You could remotely hack into the car, control the windscreen wipers, start putting the windscreen coolant on the this thing. You could control the steering wheel. You could control the brakes, all that through the audio system. So that's really scary. And after that, I never go for fancy cars. I always try to go with a car which is very low on tech.
Amazing. You mean that the ideal thing is to go back to your manual stick shift and
The less tech the car has, the better it is.
I agree. I realize that as someone was telling me the other day, for a Tesla, it's almost like an Android on wheels.
Yeah, very scary. Very scary. Because you don't even have a driver there, right? So if that something goes wrong and there's a glitch which the computer software is not able to handle, I mean, it's over.
Amazing. So again, my question to you, Rojas, is you understand this technology so well, but nobody that I know of can even say that they know understand 1%. And staying with an old model car is also not the answer. What does one do?
Well, I would say, honestly, don't blindly run behind technology. Just because a technology exists doesn't mean you should use it. So I would say be practical, right? If you don't understand technology, don't use that product. So when it comes to a car, I mean, why do we really need the entire car to be controlled from a phone? Why? I mean, how does it really add value to your life? But because there is a flip side to it. Any technology in the world can be hacked and in due time is always hacked. Because ultimately, who designs technology? Human beings. Who breaks it? Another human being. So I would say, you know, okay, when it comes to phones, for example, now it doesn't make sense to use a feature phone. But I would recommend have a feature phone where your OTPs come. Because if someone is able to hack into your smartphone, which is not difficult to do, today your entire wealth is controlled through that phone.
Correct.
So I always recommend keep another phone, which nobody in the world knows the number to, except your bank. So all your OTPs should come to a feature phone. And for the rest of it, your WhatsApp and everything, use a smartphone. See, a feature phone is $1,000 today, right? So this is the way you should be able to handle things, because every day banks are getting hacked. Everybody is getting hacked. And it has to happen to you once and you lose so much of your wealth. So I would say if you don't understand the tech, don't go for it. Try to keep your life a little low tech.
Okay, that's well said. I don't know how all our viewers and listeners will react to that. But
so I would request all your viewers and listeners, get a feature phone for your OTPs and don't share that number with anybody in the world. Okay. Let people call you on a phone where you have WhatsApp and everything. Don't worry, even if it gets hacked, you don't lose much.
Okay, well said. So now let me come back to the Wrapped Asset Project. You did explain, you know, very, very briefly, and we have lot, we have time to talk about it a little more. Help me to understand, how will this make a difference in the life of the common man? Sure. I mean, NFTs are coming and, you know, blockchains are coming and Bitcoin is being talked about. What does it do to the common man?
Sure. So I'd like to actually begin with NFT as a use case, because that's one of the prime areas that we are focusing. And we have now developed a blockchain dedicated to NFTs, and which has zero transaction fee. Now, the word NFT is most commonly misunderstood, because we keep hearing about digital art being made an NFT. And according to me, that's a horrible use case. What are you going to do with that screenshot or an image?
Correct.
Right? It doesn't really make sense. I believe the word NFT is misunderstood. And the real value of an NFT comes when we talk about something which is called a non-bankable asset.
Okay.
And examples of this, one is intellectual property, copyright, patent, trademarks. Another is real estate, like, you know, the luxury homes and other things. When we talk about, and the third would be collectibles, wines, art, you know, as in physical, very expensive art. What the world of NFTs is actually trying to do is tokenize that and fractionalize ownership. Let me give you a simple question. You've heard about the Mona Lisa. Do you think that the value of the Mona Lisa will keep going up in the future? Logically, it should, right? It's one of a kind painting.
Correct.
Now the painting hangs in a museum. Now imagine the painting continues to hang in the museum, but people like you and me can buy a fraction of it. I think as an investment, that would outpace virtually any investment in the world. But imagine if I could do that with $100. That is the kind of investment opportunity that can be brought to the common man. That why should the common man be restricted to only put his money into a fixed deposit or maybe say a mutual fund, which may not even beat inflation? Why can't we make fancy investments, which today only the rich can do? Like I said, one square centimeter of a built-up property in a Dubai, or fractional ownership of the Mona Lisa. And that is the real value which NFTs can bring, where you can start as even a common investor getting tiny amounts in such kind of assets. And what that do I believe is a real potential.
But my question to you is, what do I do with that tiny amount of the Mona Lisa or a fraction of the Mona Lisa?
Increase your money. So let's say today you put 100 rupees, 5 years from now, that may be worth 200.
I see.
And those kind of investments are today only available to the super rich. So they invest in fancy art, wine bottles, but these are really good investments. Why can't they be available to the common man?
But what you're now telling me, Rojas, is that you're changing the whole concept of investment. Right. If I buy a piece of art, which is worth, say, 20 lakh rupees, I buy it and I bring it to my house and I hang it on the wall, which I can then enjoy all the time. If I buy a fraction of the Mona Lisa, the only thing I can say is I own a fraction of the Mona Lisa, which is always going to be in the Louvre and I'll never be able to, you know, not only can I never visit it all the time, but it'll be expensive to visit it, but I'll never be able to own it.
Okay. So to speak. You buy a share in a company, do you really own, I mean, you own a tiny fraction of the company, right? The same questions I could ask you, are you going to go and visit the company? No. Are you ever going to be full owner of the company? No. Then why do you still buy mutual funds or invest in shares?
Because as you said very clearly, that when I buy a share of a company, I own that part.
Yeah, but you own such a tiny fraction. Similarly, you're owning a tiny fraction of the Mona Lisa. Why is it any different?
Okay.
But the possibility is that when you invest in certain kinds of art, the value increase would outpace inflation.
But then also, conversely, would this become a huge attraction for the owner of a painting, not the Mona Lisa, but say Amitabh Bachchan owns a painting worth 10 crores, and then he decides to put that painting on through NFT. The hypothetical value of the painting could go up to 100 crores. Mm-hmm. Then if he sells that painting to someone else, what happens to all the NFT owners?
Excellent question. So that is why I don't see this happening for paintings held by private people, but it would apply to paintings held by trusted museums. Mm-hmm. So then you know that the painting's never going to leave the museum because it's also generating rental avenue. I mean, when people pay a ticket to enter the museum, they're ultimately going to see those artifacts.
Correct.
So some part of the rental income also can come to you. Mm. And secondly, you know, the museum's not going to do that. Mm. So it would work for museum owned or held pieces.
Okay. So now let me move on and talk a little bit about Bitcoins. We have another few minutes. You also mentioned that you mined Bitcoins and deleted them.
Right.
Tell me about this experience. And are you beginning to mine again?
So that's a very painful experience that I had. So this was again way back in 2010. Mm. Actually, at that time, the only way to get Bitcoin was to mine them. Mm. You don't really have exchanges and all. Mm. And you could use regular computers to do the mining. You didn't need nearly high-end fancy equipment that you need today. Now, after I mined a bunch of them, I was shifting my computer. I never thought Bitcoin would really have much economic value. So I thought instead of wasting time transferring them, why not just delete them?
Mm.
And it's later that suddenly Bitcoin started shooting up. But now there is no way for me to retrieve them. Because what people don't know is you own a cryptocurrency only if you have the private key, which corresponds to the address in which the crypto is held.
I see.
And if you delete that private key without noting it down or backing it up, the crypto is gone forever. So today I could go to the Bitcoin blockchain and see my Bitcoin there in an address, but there is no way for me to access it anymore.
And nobody else can access it either.
Nobody in the world can access it. It's lost. And in fact, it's believed that 1/3 of the world's Bitcoins are actually lost because they were mined at an earlier time and no one realized the value.
Mm.
And unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. And no, I don't mine it anymore. Today, it's not even feasible.
Okay.
It's not even economically feasible for an ordinary individual to do that.
Fair enough. And my last question to you, when I was reading about you, there is the Future Money playbook that you wrote. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this book. I'm assuming it's a book.
Right.
Or is it just a playbook, which
it's
is...
It's an ebook which anyone can download for free. So I wrote it when I was trying to teach my daughters, because both of them now work in the crypto space. Although they're still in school, one's in 11th, one's in 8th. But they still have started doing a lot of work in crypto. So when I was explaining it to them, I noted down what they needed to know and what questions they had, and I converted that into a playbook.
Okay.
So the next 2022 edition will be out soon, and anybody in the world can download it for free.
Mm.
Through this book, I'm trying to explain how crypto actually works so that before you put your money, you understand in depth what are the avenues available to you.
Mm.
And it's not only stopping at crypto, but there are multiple forms of future money, which I believe everybody should know.
Mm.
And those investment avenues are open to everyone.
Mm.
So that's what the book tries to do. And it's a very practical book.
Amazing, amazing. Absolutely incredible. Ross, on that note, I want to really thank you. For me, who is fairly illiterate as far as technology is concerned, this has been an absolutely incredible conversation. We're now talking about cybercrime, talking about wrapped assets, talking about blockchains, about NFTs, and about Bitcoins. Thank you for everything that you're doing, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.